We're doing a book.
It's a semi. Product positioning, subconscious, subliminal.
No one can see this shit.
Does anyone know I have we have this book out yet? Have you started, Mark? Oh, we're in. Does anyone know we've got this out yet? Everyone's wondering who Mark is.
I can't wait to speak to you about that.
Can you not?
No.
The thing I want to speak to you about, mate, is A, is Sylvester Stallone, but B, when I first met you, because when I first met you, I was sat in Newcastle in that wonderfully, it was kind of an upmarket room, wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you remember? Radisson Hotel.
Radisson Hotel. And I'm sat in the front, Paul's doing his thing. He's selling a course. And then you rock up. It's like, it was like $3,000 this course or something. What was it?
Yeah, a couple of grand. Yeah.
And everyone in there is like personal trainers. Everyone's dressed in like the personal trainer way. You've been to enough of events, you know what it's like. And I'm sure I'm gonna keep talking about Mark, who's behind the camera, but Mark's been to enough of them as well. He knows the
deal.
I don't
think I'd been at that many at that point.
No, you hadn't really been. And Richard, I tell you how I know you hadn't been to many at that point. Because I was looking around, I was like, who the fucking hell is that guy? Because you had that all white Sergio Tacchini tracksuit on. Jesus. And you take the mick out of my clothes. And you had a bit of hair.
Uh-huh.
And you were never as built as you are now.
No, I was coming out of my fat stage.
Yeah, you looked like you'd lost a lot of weight. And
I was a slim, fat guy.
And you had this Rolex on. And you're like, I want to do your course. You had this real like growl to you, like a bit of a, you know, you could tell you weren't going to the personal trainer conventions. And then I remember you were like, I'm in. And Paul's like, great, we'll get your forms, fill out, put your details on. No, sold that, mate. I've got the cash with me.
Pulled it out of my pocket and paid his ass.
I was just like, Paul, you sure you won't take this bloke on? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was brilliant.
Then his missus come in and say, I've got some guy in the front saying he wants to pay cash.
Absolutely amazing. That's when I first met you. And here you are today, mate. Part of Unbreakable, doing your own thing, living a dream.
It's been one hell of a journey.
Oh, mate. I've also seen you complete an event with a broken ankle, walking the hills, walking the beach.
Well, I didn't think anyone knew. I just had the cast off 2 days before.
Yeah.
And I was desperate to do this thing. I don't know why I was so desperate. You know, respect to Paul at the time. I think he was the only guy that was really speaking openly and vulnerably that I'd seen. That was like, I can kind of relate to this guy. Didn't really know who he was at the time. But I think at that time in my life, I was at a place where I thought I needed to get to this point. And, you know, the transformation had happened and I felt a lot worse than when it all started. I couldn't figure it out. So he was singing to me. And I think, some of the points he made that day really made sense, especially the core four. You remember, body, being, balance, and business?
Yeah, dividing your life up and four,
shit, I'm just all about business. But
Let me hold you there, right? Because this is something I always think is, we were driving from Glasgow, weren't we?
Yeah.
We do a lot of driving. And I was on the train home. I think I sent you that voice message. Yeah, so I was like, you had a 360 shift in your life, didn't you? Like, I don't, like, beyond belief. So when I first met you from that day, I mean, you'd changed a lot at that point, I imagine. And I was thinking, you broke a pattern, which I think is real difficult. What did I say to you? It's along the lines of, like, basically, by breaking the pattern of your environment and everything you've been used to, you've allowed the people following you, like your kids, to have completely different choices. Because if you hadn't have broke the momentum of the direction your life was heading, your kids would be following that, wouldn't they? Without a name.
If it even got to the point of being able to have kids, I don't think that was a direction that was going to pan out that way.
Like, it's a complete 360 from where you were, probably what you thought, what you believed about life, to where you are now.
Yeah.
Without a name.
100%.
So I suppose, we never talk about this, but what made you do it? Like, I think there's a moment everyone has. That's why this is called, this show is called Shit Happens for a Reason. What made you go, I fucking need to do something? I think everyone has a moment in their life where they go, I need to do something. If you don't have it, I don't think anything changes.
I've heard you say this before, and I think, you know, I agree with the moment, but I think there's moments that lead to the moment. Do you know what I mean? There was things building up to the moment. And really the key moment was being in jail and getting time to think. And naturally, I just thought, man, I'm blaming everyone for my situation here. In fact, I was blaming my cold D.
You what?
My cold D, so you know, your co-defendant, your partner in crime at the time.
No, I don't know stuff like that. No. I'm from the country.
So Ford
I've never
just
had
got,
a cold D.
You've had a cold D, not a cold D.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, yeah. That's some hard stuff, cold D.
I'd say that too long. you have a co-defendant, that's your... The people you locked up with on a certain crime, and it was four of us. So when we got in jail, we were padded up together, and the lad that I was padded up with was a closer friend at the time than the lads that I got locked up with. One of the guys got locked up with, I only met that night. Right. Funny enough, that's a whole different story, because he couldn't come on the wing, so to say. And we was like, what's wrong with this guy? Come, we can't come on. Turns out one of my good mates was on trial for killing his brother. Oh, we didn't even know, you know what I mean? And I was like, shit. That's
so you're
a whole
sat in a jail,
story, yeah.
So you sat in a jail cell.
Yeah. Anyhow,
blaming your Cody.
No, I think because we was arguing a lot, because we was all in jail over a situation that shouldn't have happened. And I was playing a victim. Like, fucking hell, you shouldn't have done this and that. And now we're here, you take the charge and this shit, you know. We're all here, we shouldn't be here, and it's your shit. All these arguments. And it got that heated. They had to split us up. They had to put us in different pads. It was at each other's throat.
What's a pad?
Your cell.
Mate, layman it down for me.
I thought I'm laying it down. I forget I'm speaking to the country boy.
Yeah, I'm thinking pads.
I think it was a relief though when I started to think, shit. And I'm pointing the blame here. And at that point, I'm 17 stone. You know, a real angry, entitled victim. Looking back now, I didn't have them terminologies and didn't have that knowledge then at the time, but I remember thinking, maybe Christian's right, you know, we're all here because we was all there. And but you know, I'd already started asking questions, because I know leading up to this, there was a situation where my mate had been shot dead by my best mate's friend, you know. And out of all the friends that I've lost through, could say, you know, gang violence, I think that was the one that I started asking questions like, this shit ain't right, you know? Mm. You go to a funeral to put your friend to rest, which is someone's son, someone's brother, you know, someone's family member, someone's friend. And then, you know, that funeral gets shot up and another lad loses his life. Funny enough, his younger brother was shot like 5 years before and lost his life. That's now, you know, a mother that's lost two kids. So I was already asking questions at the time, thinking something don't feel right. In my heart, it didn't feel right, you know? But your worldview is still the same. So I remember just thinking, you know, I'm the reason why I'm here. I'm the reason why I'm 17 stone. I'm the reason why I'm overweight. I pointed the blame for so long, which I think, you know, is a bit of a defense. I know, you know, maybe there is valid points of pointing going, shit, you know, how's this happened? It shouldn't have. And
do you think, that's one of the things I say for now with you, the one thing that fires you up the most about people as well, isn't it? When they're being entitled, when they're not taking responsibility, when they're not like, if someone's in that zone, you're like...
And it's not even like pointing it out. I just know it leads to nowhere. I think you can only understand the victim. I'm an expert victim.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When I'm entitled, I'm not like, you know, I'm some rich kid, I want to be entitled, but my entitlement, little or small, just... It serves no purpose. Well, maybe it does as feedback as this isn't the right thing, right? Because everything has its purpose or something.
Yeah, I think
degree.
We all do it. I don't think it doesn't matter if you're on the streets doing something. No. I don't think if it's, you know, somebody who's been fortunate to be born into amazing circumstances. Uh-huh. I think we all get entitled and we're all victims on time, aren't we?
Well, I was playing the victim the other day because I was certain that the internet provider was messing with my shit because I needed to get my 16-year-old daughter's card in, you know, this Moonpig card. And I'm like, only happening because I'm trying to put, you know, like playing the entitled victim. So it's part of the difference
it's
is having the awareness,
him.
Right?
It's demoralising.
Of course it is. So the reason why I get on people's back straight away is you got to nip that shit in the butt. And I know where it's going, you know.
Mm.
But also, it was the eye-opener that made the difference. Because at the beginning, I knew then. Well, I had this idea, I thought, well, if these decisions have got me here, then surely if I make better decisions, then it's got to lead to a better place. And all I had then was faith. You know what I mean? Like, I just knew that something needed to change, which was an absolute...
It didn't change immediately for you, though.
It changed immediately.
It didn't?
No, hell no. No, it didn't.
I mean, it must have been, like you said, in the cell, you're thinking, hey, mate, I need to do something. Yeah. Like, what's going on here? We're all arguing, we're all blaming. And then you come out and then you got other things going on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it wasn't a thing like I've come out, I need to change my life type of thing. But yeah. I just remember thinking, shit, you know, I need to take responsibility for where I'm at. And to be truthful, I don't think it was mentally. It was physically, you know, 17 stone. You've seen a couple of guys in shape. Started doing a bit in the gym, in jail.
Mm-hmm.
One of my best mates, well, my best mate now, who I call a brother, he was gym orderly at the time. He was getting us in the gym. And I remember actually starting to feel better. You know what I mean? I'd not felt good for a long time. The time I felt better when I was, you know, sedated in summer, you know?
Yeah, I reckon, I'm thinking about this. I think sometimes we don't know we don't feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I think, do you know what I mean? It's yeah. Like, even like when you're just not looking after yourself, you don't realise until you start doing a bit and you're like, actually, I wasn't feeling that good, was I? Do you know what I mean? When you're in it, innit?
100%. That's what I think.
Like when you're fucking 17 stone, fat, overweight,
yeah.
You probably don't think, your reference of feeling good is different to some, when you're in shape,
you don't
innit?
Have a reference because you just, all you know is I feel like shit. Mm. And then, but you don't know why you're feeling like shit. That's an issue that I think only now looking back is what keeps people stuck. You know, you don't actually know why your energy is low or you feel like shit or you're fixating on things or you don't know what the food you're eating are having a massive impact on your health or your sleep is having a massive impact on your energy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The times of sleeping, you know, have no schedule, no yeah. routine, no nothing. Every day is just about waking up and trying to make a buck, you know, because that's what we call a green-eyed monster, you know, you're just infected by everything's about making money, which is obviously not the case, but it comes at a cost of a lot of things.
You've had a physical... thing is, physical transformation is huge. Mine was the other way around. I was, like, skinny, you know, and you people would take the piss out of skinny word. You know what I mean? As a lad, nothing worse than being skinny. Almost better to be a big fat lad, to be yeah. honest. Big, angry fat lad than a little skinny kid. Every football club, he's a bit small. He's a bit small, isn't he? You know, he's a bit small, like, 'cause they want big lads. So yeah. I was like, I need to get big. I mean, that was the other way around. Yeah. I need to get big. But the confidence I got from getting in nick, getting in shape, was mad.
Yeah.
And I think actually, we talk about this a lot, but I think we need to make that shift at a minute from physical health and mental health being so separate. Mm. Do you know what I mean? We spoke about this at great length when we, like, just in little chats. It's like, it's all the same. It all feeds each other. But I think there's been a lean towards in society and messaging, like, that as long as you're happy, it doesn't matter kind of, you know, how out of shape you are. Do you know what I mean? I don't think people realise how crap we feel because we don't look after ourselves physically. Do you know what I mean? Well, I think it's a key element. It's like, if you can just move, it doesn't matter, not necessarily how you look necessarily, but no, but there's no, you had no business being 17 stone, really, when you think about it. That's not like, oh, I'm a little bit, that's bordering on I'm really, really unhealthy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's bound to make you feel and think a bit crappy because biology's, and that's not me judging you for being 17 stone, by the way, is it? It's not me saying, oh, you were 17 stone, like, what's the matter with you? I get it. You had a lot on and you had so many issues going on that's happened. But you would not be, I don't think, the person you are at that size and that still, would you? Because you were treating yourself in a way that wasn't healthy, weren't you, if you're honest?
Well, that's the only way you get out of shape is not looking after yourself, you know, treating yourself like shit. But I don't think you understand the consequences of treating yourself like shit. Because for a long time, I was trying to, I was in denial that I was out of shape.
Yeah.
And, you know, because your environment ain't giving you that feedback, you know, people ain't saying anything. And it was this one guy, I remember, you know, a good friend of mine, actually. And yeah, I'd not seen him for a while. And I rocked up and I seen him and he said, fuck me, B. I said, what happened to you, man? He said, fix up. And you know, funny enough, I was only saying to this a couple of months ago and, you know, he's a changed guy. He was a savage like myself. And he was like, man, I'm sorry for saying that. I said, sorry for what?
Yeah.
You know, because it was actually that bit of acknowledgement that I needed to go. I actually remember thinking, shit, is everyone seeing this? Because I thought no one was seeing it. Maybe everyone was seeing it, just didn't say anything. Or maybe they just didn't give a shit about saying anything, you know?
Yeah, I think it's for me in my own life, when I'm looking better physically, it's usually a good sign I'm probably looking after myself.
100%.
In fundamentally, I'm probably eating, I'm probably moving quite well. And like you said, we can beat around the bush and we can say, it doesn't matter, but how many people do we see a year come through our stuff and, you know, Unbreakable? 1,000 maybe, across the board in different things, forget the free things. And I think if we're honest, sometimes, very often, people who might be struggling where they're at are also struggling a bit physically as well.
Yeah.
Not moving so much, sat a lot. And that's no judgment because, in a sense, because like society has kind of made that easy. We all sit a lot.
Yeah.
And we all eat a bit of crap, don't we? I'm like, God, I eat some crap when I want. Like, do you know what I mean? It's there, it's easy. But there's a massive, that is a massive factor in why sometimes we're not thinking and feeling great. We can go in and try and mess with all the thoughts and try and, you know, improve that. But if the whole system's not really in a good place, it makes it real difficult, doesn't it?
And that's what, you know, Mother Nature intended it to be. You know, like, we are not a species that's supposed to be out of shape physically, mentally and emotionally. You know, and I know that firsthand. You know, at 25 years old, and I look back at pictures, then I look sick. You can say I've got big,
I've seen a picture of me. Your eyes are tight. Yeah.
My face looks swollen.
You're massive.
Like Tony Soprano style, you know.
If we had a picture of that, though, we need to get like a hologram of you next to me. Like, if you had a picture of those two people, which one would you say was the happiest? But it's not just been a physical transformation, of course, but like if you are a happier person now, aren't you?
Oh, massively.
I suppose, are you in shape because you're happier, or are you happier because you're in shape?
Maybe a bit of both, really, because it bleeds into each other, doesn't it? Like, but you know, we know guys that are in shape that are unhappy.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's the other extreme that people are so focused on how they look, and you know, are more concerned how they look than how they feel. Mm. That's the other extreme to looking well. You know,
yeah.
I don't really train to physically. You know, I haven't got this key look that I want to be shredded. I'm like, look, I'm training because I want to be in shape. You know, I see the value of being fit. You know, this is the vehicle of life, right? This is the thing that's going to get you to the end result and to the finish line. So, you know, if you ain't looking after that, then that leads to a whole host of problems. But if you are just physically, you know, focused on improving yourself physically for thinking that's going to make you feel good, I think this is a trap for most people because, you know, how many people say, oh, you know, when I get in shape, I'll feel happier. That was one of my issues. This is how I ended up finding this because I'd got in better shape.
And you still went up.
I transformed my life. I was like, hey, you know, I've got to get a legal job and do all this type of shit. I had a girlfriend at the time, ends up being my wife. And I had a lot of these things that I thought, hey, when I get to there, I'm going to feel happier. And actually the disconnect was catastrophic because I remember being a lot lonelier then because I left a lot of people behind. My circle had changed. In fact, it got lonely because there was no one at the table.
I think that's, by the way, that's a huge factor of,
you know,
change.
And I really
isolating it can be when you start changing patterns.
I remember people from, you know, my upbringing were like, he's found God, he's lost a plot.
He's lost the plot.
You know, all this crazy shit was coming out. Who's left us behind? He don't give a shit. You know,
he's better, soft. Thinks he's better.
Yeah, he's, you know, people tried to test the waters a little bit. So I had to deal with all that. People again, entitlement from old friends, things like, you don't phone me anymore, I might phone you. Well, you don't, there's no handouts like I used to. Because I think growing up, and you helped me with this, right? My heart was so big, and I, you know, helping people for me. I never told you where helping people really set fire for me. Ever told you a story? So there was a guy.
Tell me the story. Yeah.
There was a guy in primary school called David Loftus, right? And it's funny how we're even speaking about him because I seen his sister on Facebook just as I come off and it brought it all back. I completely forgot about this guy, which is pretty bad because he was probably my best mate growing up in school. And he had some type of leukemia, right? And he lost his eyesight. And I remember I used to take him to the toilet in school. And I remember this like it was yesterday. And I'd had a piss, I don't know. But I remember standing at the sink and he was having a piss. And he said, And I'm afraid of going because I think I'm going to get my eyesight back.
No, mate.
Right, honestly. And you know, people, you see, in these sticky situations like that, you see courage at its finest sometimes, you know. Like I've seen it, I've witnessed this a few times, Lisa's sister, another one. And I, you know, is the word, is this the right word, fascinated? Because I'm intrigued that way. Like, I really connect with that type of behavior or energy, you know, when people are just seeing the.
What happened?
Well, he passed away, but I think that my way of caring for him, maybe that was the start of it, because I still have that feeling that I had for him that day. You know, where generally, you know me, I generally give a shit about the people I love. I'm
to your own detriment.
Yeah, which has been in the end, right? But that's always been a feeder, and now I've been able to control that. You know, it's obviously having a better result, but, and I've seen death at a young age, and I remember that heartache, and I remember his sister, you know, and I remember just thinking, even though there was a lot of loss, I remember thinking that I'd gained a lot as well, you know.
I think we all have these moments where it wakes you up a little bit. You forget stuff like that, don't we?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We forget these.
But it then led on to this feeling of needing people's approval, acceptance, and this
way
of,
I was going
like,
to come down to this, because I think a lot of it, you know, when we talk about getting in shape, you said, you were really in shape and at your unhappiest. Not unhappiest, but you're still unhappy.
Massively.
I've been in great shape. Like, I look back, I found a picture of me not long back, and I was like, shredded. The reality is, I probably then would have been going, I'm not shredded enough. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'd have been searching for them extra things. But I remember looking at me thinking, God, I was so unhappy then at 28, 27. Yeah. I was so unhappy. And I think when I pin back to a huge amount of my own journey and what you were talking about there, is like, I think really I was just looking to be enough all the time.
Mm.
Looking to be accepted. Looking to be kind of like, I'm
fitting
enough. Yeah,
yeah,
to be accepted by, but ultimately it was by myself, wasn't it? But to have a level of like, I had no self-esteem, I don't think, no self-worth. It was like always trying to be, gain some kind of approval. Do you know what I mean? And I think that is at the root of most of the struggles we have as human beings, this desire to be accepted for who we are. Like, you know, like for the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
And that's a hard point of change. And I was thinking for you as well, some of the stuff you've come through and you've changed, and you've left behind certain, you know, maybe people or certain environments, sort of thing. There comes a level, I think, well, from my own experience, I'm not going to put words into your mouth, but where you're like a little bit of guilt, sometimes a little bit like a little bit of frustration, a bit of shame almost for who you've been, and shame for who you've been, and then guilt for like getting away from that on times.
Yeah, you helped me with that a lot, right? But maybe a few people have helped me with that. Because you remember when I started transitioning, I started to be a better man looking back. I was like, man, I've done some gnarly shit. You know what I mean? I've been.
If you're honest, though, be honest. It's hard to admit. I bet you were an insecure man back then.
Listen, I've said to this before. This comes from insecurity, and this comes from insecurity because although it's like, oh yeah, primary school, and my friend David gave me a lesson there that, you know, has really probably shaped me to the man I am. Primary school was horrific for me, and you know, I was getting bullied real bad. You know, I had a kid in my year. There was an older brother in the year above and an older brother in the year above that, and I was up against the three of them. I had bent teeth, second name Fanning. You can imagine the shit that was coming up, and I was terrorised, you know. So maybe the insecurity comes from that, because, you know, flip forward into high school and actually knock this kid clean out, probably out of fear, the whole, you know, drop the whole Fanny, you know, bent teeth, everyone's laughing. My reaction was to just bang, and then, oh, that changed. And then from that point on, he didn't carry on with that shit.
Yeah, you gained a level of...
I gained a level, but actually I started dealing with everything like that.
Yeah.
You know, it created the opposite, well, the other extreme. And looking back now, I know it was because I got scared that quick. This was my reaction. And I was known for a bit of a, you know, an erratic, hot-headed guy. And because I would just try and put the fire out straight away. Mm. And then, you know, most guys are full of shit as well. And you know, it's not like a race thing where I'm from, but you know, white guy where I was from was deemed a shitbag. And a lot of these guys had this persona of people just back down. So when he met me and I didn't back down, you know, they quickly changed.
Do you think you got? I reckon, I'm analysing now. Do you think you got a lot of self worth from that, though?
I think we form identities.
And yeah, I think it fed something though, didn't it? It's like, yeah, this is who I am. Like, I'm like, look at me. I'm something. Like, I've got my stuff now. This is who I am.
Well, in marketing, it's all about your brand, right? On the streets, the same. Like, I despise gangsters, right? And you know, maybe people got a different description. The gangsters I've seen were guys that, yeah, they maybe had the name and done the thing, but it's just like a business. It, you know, you're feeding down in the hierarchy to get, you know, your employees to do the footwork, you know? And it just didn't appeal to me that. Although a lot of my friends were, and I respect them for what they were doing, and I understand why the temptation come in, and also why it becomes a little bit attractive, you know, to be, because I'm all about brotherhood. You know, you know me, I want to be part of a team.
Yep.
I want to roll with a crew. So it's especially when, you know, the attraction is the misconception of the power and the money. That looks very appealing to any man.
Yeah, what do you miss about it? What do you miss about that?
Miss about that world?
Yeah, because I watched an interview with one of the top mafia dons who'd come out and not got killed, not gone to jail, because basically made everyone a shitload of money.
Yeah.
And he was like, what?
Yeah.
He was like, that world is so appealing to men and young boys. And he explains why, I'm not going to say. And they said, what do you miss about it? And I'm not going to say what you missed about it. But he missed something. What do you?
Well, there's a lot of things that I miss about it. I think the extremes I miss. I really miss the extremes. You know, the only way you can put it, you got guys that go to war and come back. They struggle with civilization, right? With normal day to day 9-to-5 stuff. I really struggled with that for a long time. Remember, I told you the story about me saying to my girlfriend at the time, I think everyone's trying to stab me in the back at this job. Remember?
Yeah. Because people are nice to you.
Are you fucking deluded? Maybe they're just like, that's how they are. And he actually generally were. Did have me back.
I think that, you know, a lot of the world's like that now. Messages I get in my inbox is like, people at halfway through the free 5 days. Is this really free?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you sure? You're not charging me? How am I possibly charging you for this? But people are really like, there's a lot out there. People don't trust people.
I mean, I tried a few jobs and a few things. I've got a real problem with being told. This is what happened at school. Like people, you're being taught. Nah, I felt like I was being told. Why? Because if I started asking questions, they won't be answered. It was like, you know, I was being a rebel. In the end, that was the question. Having a skill to ask questions is why we'd be able to catapult where we are now.
Yeah. But I also missed ask them better now as well.
It's the ego style things, isn't it? Like, you know, when...
Status you must miss.
Massively. But... See, my status wasn't unfair. My status was on respect, and there's still a lot of guys that respect me for me respecting them. You know, even when we had little things running and we'd, you know, there was always be a cut, there were guys that would treat, you know, their workers like so disrespectfully, you know, paying with peanuts. I was always like, nah, we're 50-50 all the way. Mm. And it was unfortunate for them when they start making the money that, you know, their characters would change.
I suppose the reason is because I think change is, anyone listening to something like this is, it's probably like, you know, I'm trying to change some stuff. And I think change is really difficult. Everyone said makes out change is the simplest thing on the planet. But it's not. Like we're paid by people who want to change to change.
Yeah.
And that's still hard.
Oh, massive.
You know, like, because it's this process of letting go of who you've been and who you are.
Yeah.
And we all miss that. You know, there's a reason, you know, it's, I suppose what I'm trying to get across here is for you, yes, you know that the benefits far outweigh now than they did then, you know, in your life. But there was elements that that almost were hard to leave behind, weren't there?
Yeah, and there's a lot that I've not left behind that I've just been able to sharpen. You know, when I had that thing going on with the Texas guys with the oil sales offices over in Texas, and I was sat in a room with multi-generational billionaires, right? That's how they introduce themselves. Hi, we're multi-generational billionaires. And you know,
is that your American accent? Was Mike Tyson there?
Nah.
Go on.
No,
was
Mike Tyson there? I ain't doing Mike.
Go on, do Mike for everybody. No. You did Mike before we started.
Maybe later. Because now the pressure's on it. It'll probably come out
listening.
Later.
You'll be fine.
You'll hear it one day. Like,
I reckon you could.
That's fucking guy, man.
I reckon you could.
Take the fucking piss.
Yeah, no.
I reckon you could take him anyway.
I'd have a go.
Here we go.
I fear no man, you know. Everyone's got a right hand. I know that I'll be going
like,
in and getting
it's
levied.
Like the Instagram comments right now. Because I love this. I watch little clips of it. But he wouldn't mess with me or Mike back in the day. He wouldn't mess with my mate Steve down the road.
You see, I'd see
ashtray to the head.
I know.
Here we go.
Well, that's the difference, isn't it? You know, I mean, I've got into Thai boxing. That's another story. I level my discipline.
What were we talking about before that?
Where are we going?
We just got Mike.
So yeah, there's the things that I've
generational
learned.
Yeah. Billionaires.
And I remember him like, you had to have this, what do you call it? Not a prenup, like when you can't speak about certain things, what do you call it?
Yeah, I don't know, but I get what you're saying. You've got to sign something to say, non-disclosure.
Non-disclosure, yeah. And I've took my auntie over who's massive with corporate deals, with all the big airlines. So, you know, I've brought my own people and he's like, we don't speak about this, and this. And by the end of it, I had literally had these three guys eating out of my hand. You know what I mean? But it was natural. And we spoke about everything they didn't want to speak about. Because I was inquisitive. I'm asking questions and I'm...
The crossover.
Yeah, yeah. And I come out, I remember my auntie looking at me going, what the fuck happened in there?
Are you trying to say...
That in terms of business and handling yourself...
You were able to bring a lot of them skills forward with you?
Massively. You know,
What don't you miss about your time back then?
What I don't miss is the corruption and destruction on both sides. Yeah. And I also don't miss the greed, you know, the scent of greed. You know me with disrespect and loyalty. I don't miss any of that. You know, bullshitting, people full of shit. I think corruption's the most used word in the dictionary. And, you know, I've seen some corrupt things in my time. But also... I've also seen in them industries like police and judges, you know, do some great things. It was this guy called Bill, right? We used to do ID parades in our estate. ID parades pretty much fed the whole estate. And what an ID parade was you'd get all the kids off the estate and they would come to the police station and they might pick about 30 kids to come in, usually if you're on side with them and, you know, being polite and all the basics. And the ID parade was... the old school ID parade where they would pick 8 kids or the suspect could pick 8 kids that look like him because the witnesses are going to come in these rooms and then pick, you know, the suspect or
if they don't
pick him, then they can get away. And that's the whole point of these things, right? But they'd pay you a fiver for these things. And if you got picked, you got paid a tenner.
If you got picked?
Yeah, if you got picked, you got paid a tenner, right?
That even makes sense. Yeah, no. Well then, you just look like that criminal.
Maybe just because you had to do more, you know? But, you know, try and get picked to keep a straight face while you look because it's the mirror, you know, like you see yourself and they must walk in the back. And you can see him walk in just a shadow because the door would open. You see, like, people come in. And some of this shit was serious, you know? It's not always just, like, soft crime. Some of it, you could be dealing with serious stuff. And they'd always keep that... private because, you know, you got a rapist or a paedophile in this room, you got kids that are going to tear his head off, 100%, no doubt. Yeah. But anyway, this Bill.
I just need to stop you there, mate, because it just shows where we grew up. On my estate, because I grew up on a little council estate, you know, we used to get the library van turn up or the baker man. The baker man would come with his...
The baker man.
He'd come with a little thing and our baker man's here at the top of the estate. So you'd walk up with mum and he'd have... you know, baked goods. And I'd always buy a Caramac. I remember that.
Caramac.
You had the ID parade people.
Yeah, the ID parade. Not only that, like this caused a lot of problems. You'd get like mums coming up with all the kids trying to get in.
Take all the money off him.
You know, you'd get the kids that got paid and then round the corner they've not been paid. You know what I mean? You know, like there'd be a queue of kids wanting to buy some shit. And you know, like it just ended up being a tuck shop. So Bill was a real nice guy. Always had risk. That's the thing, you know, it's having respect. You know, this guy always had respect for us. There's coppers that treat us like shit, and then he got treated like shit. But this guy had respect for us, and I really connected with this dude. Sometimes he gives a bit of advice. Anyway, one day, he comes out, and there's this crackhead there, and he goes, I think his name was Ian, out. He says, why? He says, out, you know why. And he's like, don't, boss, I don't. And he says, get out before I embarrass you in front of everyone. He's like, oh, fuck you know better than all. And he goes, I wish he died that day. And I thought, wow, what the fuck was he on about? Anyway, he runs off. And it turns out that he had robbed the clock, his shitty £5 clock, out the ID parade room where you all wait, you know, and that's why he got banned. Turns out this copper was wrestling with some dude with a gun in his career as a, you know, on foot patrol. And they were wrestling, and this gun hit the floor and went off. And that's what he was referring to, yeah? 2 days later, Bill says he sees this crackhead, like black and blue. He'd had a beating, you know what I mean? And I remember him saying, Fanny, you wouldn't have anything to do with old Ian getting hospitalised with you. I was like, don't know what you're on about, sir. Yeah. You know when that man left? I'd love to see him again. Because I have heard he's still alive, this fellow. He gave me a box of chisels, wood chisels. He'd heard that I was kind of doing some joinery stuff at the time, yeah. Some guy took us on, didn't really work out anyhow. And he said, whatever you do, son, you carve away. You carve your own life, you know what I mean? And I'd love to, I think I've still got these chisels, I'd love to give it him back and say, mate, I did. You know what I mean?
So well, it just shows, you should know. Pass them on.
Huh?
You should pass them on to somebody.
Yeah.
Pay it forward, that's the way it goes, isn't it?
I mean, look, man, he was, you know, I've had a cop of that. We had an argument, a real argument. My cousin had died on a bike with another friend of mine. We'd had the funeral. These police were from another estate of mine. And we was with the boys from that estate because my cousin used to run with this other crew. And he pulled us over. It was in my dad's car. So there was no reason to pull us over in my dad's car. It wasn't like on the list or something. And we get out and I'm drinking a bottle of Wicked, right, in the passenger seat. Why am I in the passenger seat? Because I was pissed and my mate was driving the car. And he says, pour that away. I says, I ain't pouring shit away, mate. He says, pour it away. I take another sip, looking at him in the day, I ain't pouring shit away. It's my cousin's funeral, you know what time it is. I ain't pouring nothing away. And there's no reason why I want to be pouring it away. And he was a guy, his partner was, we used to call him Turbinator, right? Because he was an Indian fellow with a turban. And what a name for a copper. And he was a cool guy, to be fair. Anyway, me and his copper starts arguing. And he was a serious copper at the time. Everyone was frightened to death of him. The lads on the estate that were now like, shut up, shut the fuck up. They can see where it's going. And I've offered this guy out, yeah? And he's up for it. He's like, get in the grass. I'm up for it.
I love that.
Mate, it's going to go off. This is a scene. His partner is pulling him back. I've got my lads pulling me back. And he ends up just shouting and jeffing and names. I remember him saying, you think you can speak to fucking, you know, the police on this estate as you do in your estate? You've got another thing coming. I kind of giving the police a bad credit where I'm from. And he got left at that, right? He spun off, we spun off. Mate, a month later, he sees one of my mates. He's got his firearm out. He was armed response. And he says, where's that little fucker? With his, you know, his firearm. I was that scared I bought a pink phone.
A pink phone?
Yeah, because I had it in my head with my black phone for pulling my phone out. Because it was these stories of lads going, oh, I thought I had a gun, but it was his phone. Yeah, I was like, Jesus. I'd bought this pink phone. And so it's just the other extreme of the people in the force, you know. I'm probably, I was, you know, was learned me a lesson or two.
I'm stuck on the man who gave you the chisels.
Yeah, so I'm not saying the opposite.
I'm stuck on the man who gave you the chisels. In fact, I think we should leave it with the chisels. Season one, show number one, leave it with the chisels.
That's where we're at, right? We're giving people the skills to carve their own life. That's where we're at, funny
encouraging people to do it. And through situations, I think the lesson there is, no matter where you're at, no matter how difficult it is, no matter how difficult the situation is, the environment is, you can find a way. That's the message I take from that.
Oh, absolutely. And I truly, you know, me and you definitely have that belief in people that it can be done. But you've got to want it. That's the difference.
100%. Okay, that's a wrap.